Welcome back to The View, everyone. Hey, look, thanks so much for subscribing, for liking, for following the podcast on whatever your preferred channel is. It's really lifting and we're getting some phenomenal guests, a bit like our guest today. But before we introduce her, today we're going to talk a little bit about changing the way you perceive yourself and whether or not fundamentally the problems that you're blaming everyone around you, whether or not maybe you've got something to do with that. And if you've listened to this podcast a few times, you'll probably realize that maybe you have a little bit more to do with your own happiness than you thought. So I'm going to make a welcome now.
Welcome to The View Podcast.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
So you want to become one of the few.
You can't skip steps. You have to put one foot in front of the other. Things take time.
I have a dream.
Hear inspiring stories from the few and learn what it takes to turn your dream into reality.
Don't be afraid to dream big. But remember, dreams without goals are just dreams.
This is The View with Boo.
Lisa Marie, thank you so much for joining me on The View podcast. I'm very excited to have a conversation around upside thinking.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. We had a little conversation ahead of time.
Oh, we had you dancing to the intro music. I mean, that's the best start we can have.
Yes, exactly.
Lisa Marie, let's get right into it. Upside thinking. I mean, what is that about? I mean, I guess I can kind of read between the lines, but I find where people have an important message, they coach people through a life experience, that there was a moment in time where these two words gelled for you. What was that moment?
Well, I was leaving federal law enforcement and looking at what my next steps were going to be. And upside thinking for me is not about positive thinking. It's really about taking the up in terms of my higher and greater mission, the up in the world, looking up to God for what that is, as well as recognizing that no matter how many times I fall, it's really not about when I'm down. It's really about more when I have the courage to be able to stand up.
It's really fascinating what you just mentioned about it's not just about positive psychology or being positive. I think one of the challenges with the Pulse-I movement is when people consume that little bit of the cool, drink that little bit of the Kool-Aid, they forget there's a little bit of accountability and action that goes with it, right? That the positive thoughts are great, but the positive thoughts actioned and bringing those together is what really builds your confidence. But you had a moment when you were in law enforcement, did you not? You presented yourself a certain way. You felt you had to show up a certain way each and every day, very male-dominated environment. What was your experience like and how did that affect and touch you?
It was really rough going in. I didn't anticipate some of the things that happened for me. I didn't expect to show up in 1994 and not to have an official like women's restroom, right? There were a lot of things that had me present myself in a way that I felt that I had to toughen up and I had to put on the armor and speak a certain way and walk a certain way and be a certain way. And it didn't serve me well at all because it was layers of inauthenticity piled upon one another. And there was a moment for me where I knew that I had to do something different. And it led me to a leadership development course. And at that leadership development course, the instructor stepped actually behind me after passing out the assessments and announced to the class that I was a zero. And
nothing like having that in public, right? Amongst a peer group.
It wasn't a safe place to receive that. And it was such a, you know, even as I say it to you today, it doesn't feel good. It wasn't about the thing that you did isn't good. It's like you yourself are a zero. So that was a huge, huge turning point for me.
And that was intentional. You felt that was a little bit of like, here's this alien within our community and we want to express this, but we also want to make you feel bad. And I assume two questions I have. The first one, why? Why make that transition? They talk about, I mean, particularly now with the wokeness that we're experiencing, and don't get me wrong, is being awake to everyone's needs and being empathetic towards everyone is great, but the exaggeration of it, perhaps not so much. I mean, you know, the early 90s, late 80s, we're all very much shaped into gender roles, right? Like a lot of those unconscious biases about mum and dad, you know, if you're a young girl, you should be a vet, you know, maybe you'd be a nurse. What was it about your upbringing that had you kind of go into a bit of a mold-breaking role in law enforcement?
Well, I was raised by a single mom, and I was definitely told that I could do whatever I wanted by my mom. However, spent a lot of time with my grandparents, and those roles were very real, that it was, you know, that girls should do this. And my grandfather really wanted girls. He really wanted boys. He didn't really want granddaughters. And so it was really growing up in a family where there was domestic violence, that was a very big thing. And I wanted to be able to take care of myself, wanted to be able to handle myself in any situation. The police came in and saved the day, so to speak. And for me, law enforcement, I had such deep respect for. And there was this part of me that was almost rebellious as a challenger growing up, that I can do all things. Perhaps that's one of the reasons why with upside thinking, it's like, I don't want to have to do all the heavy lifting. I want to rely on forces that are greater than me, you know, and that's God and listening to God. And I also want to understand that no matter how many times I get it wrong, there's always the ability to get up again and do it right. So, you know, that was wildly shaping for me, those experiences. But I had people who told me that I could do things whatever I wanted. And I don't know that I necessarily knew what that meant at the time. I don't know that I necessarily understood all of the components of the difficulties that went into being in that, in air quotes, groundbreaking role. You know, I don't know that I understood that. And there were certain things that were much harder than I could have anticipated. And there were many blessings that came from it as well.
And I think it's that transition from an unconscious force driving you to a conscious thought force driving you when you start to realize it. And I would say most people who are groundbreaking, or most people who do something different, that wasn't the intention. It wasn't the intention to, I'm going to deliberately go and put myself in a position where I'm going to be uncomfortable every day. I'm going to have to be really defensive. But there is that mindset around, hey, this is different and this is a challenge. And I can't define it, but I feel it and I want it. I want to lean into that challenge. And I guess for folks that don't feel like that, and let's call it taking the safe way, doing well at high school, going to college, getting a degree, joining an undergrad program, working your way up, and then you hit midlife and you're like, now I'm ready for a challenge. You've embraced that early. So there, here's this epiphany. You've now had this assessment. You know, you've had another kind of heartfelt day. What happened after that? Where did your headspace shift to?
Well, it certainly was a look in the mirror every single day and go, like, can you do this? Honestly, I'll say there were days where it was like, oh my. And so when I ended up at a crossroads, you could say, because my husband and I, when we dated, he was also in law enforcement, and we dated, and it was this crossroads where, am I going to stay in the agency after we get married? And I was like, I don't know how that could be possible. And I believe so much in core values and in understanding who you are and what you want and why it matters. And when you do and you live your life in that manner, it's not complicated to say, I want to do this versus this, because you're really clear who you are. And so I stood at that crossroads and went, I don't know that this is a fit. I don't know that I can have a 24/7 career and be wildly successful in my marriage with somebody who has a 24/7 career. I don't know that that's possible. And that's one of the things that opened the doors to what came next.
And I mean, I don't think people appreciate when you're in service to the community like that, that alone, without all the other elements that come with it in terms of being, you know, one of the first women in that law enforcement within those agencies, when you layer that up, I would imagine by the time you got married and you're at that point, that you can't fight for no reason, right? And when you get to that point, I guess the reason's gone and it just becomes a grind and you don't want to do it. Was there an element of just feeling a bit burned out with the whole thing as well?
There is something about being somebody who is different and a challenger. And I don't know that I was burned out as much as I would say it is about, I'm somebody who, if I'm going to see something and something doesn't make sense and you tell me we've always done it this way and this is just the way it is, I felt like that part of me that wanted to see something greater and fought for something that was like the best version of what was possible, that became exhausting. And to have it be seen as, oh, that's the person who stirs up things, whether or not as a woman or not, I'm sure there was some of that as well. But it was that part of it that gets wildly exhausting.
Challenges affect the change that everyone wants, but people find them hard to be around, I think, because of that. And they just enjoy the fruits of the change. Because I would suggest that once you left for any of the other, it would have been less of a challenge for anyone else that came in, any other women that came in through those agencies. I mean, it's still a little bit, we can't help the unconscious biases that are human, but I would imagine that you genuinely did affect quite a bit of change.
Well, I think that when I went to the academy in my class, there was a very large number of women, and it was six, if you can imagine. And this is agency-wise. So this is not like, and the class before had three and the class after me had one. And so, our class had six, which was like, wow, this is groundbreaking. And, six, when you talk about tens of thousands of people agency-wide, that's not a very large percentage for the number of classes that were coming in. And yet now their classes are closer to, a 40%, can be a 40% ratio, which is just significant to think about that and to think about the number of women who are actually in that role. I just found that for me, there were certain roles that were expected, like more of an administrative role versus a hard field role. And yet for me, I was always interested in what was more of a challenge, and not really because I want, again, as you said, it wasn't like this, I want to be the first of something or I want to be, it was more the internal desire to be able to make an impact. And I believe so much in Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where self-actualization, are you fully using your potential? And that's what I wanted to do.
Hi, it's Boo here. If you're enjoying these episodes of The Few, please show your support by leaving a review. It costs you nothing, and the more reviews we have, the better guests we can reach out and bring onto the show to help you close the gap between what you want and where you are today even faster, and help you on your journey to become one of the few too.
Yeah. I guess there's an innate drive for that for certain people that others are just kind of find difficult to grasp. But I also think if you people that have been blessed with the opportunity to live that life can distill it into a system or steps that serves the greater good. So when you started Upside Thinking, I mean, it's tough, right? It's not easy to go and articulate your thoughts in a succinct way and then build a platform in which to distribute and support people, yeah? So tell us a little bit about that journey.
If I would have known, I just can tell you, you are so right. I think that is the biggest personal development journey in the world, is opening a business. Anybody who thinks that there's like some shortcut to it, there just isn't. And for me, starting that was a big endeavor because I thought it was going to be as much as printing a business card and like talking to people about the fact that I did leadership development work when I worked in the government. And the things that when I did that work in the government and taught at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center and taught at the Leadership Development Center, and that I had this background, that was going to be enough, so to speak, and didn't realize the components of sales and marketing and putting the thoughts in paper. But what I will say that's really valuable is that because I worked with outside consultants when I worked in the government and helped to develop this body of leadership curriculum, I was able to take what I knew that I wanted to add that I couldn't use in the government and be able to use the research that I had done on my own and bring that into the body of work, which made it an easier start, even though there were so many other things that were confronting, more so on the personal level than on the business side of things. Because when you work in the government and you come up with initiatives, yes, there were people who said no to me with having new ideas, but there are more people who say yes when you're in a management and leadership role. When you have a business and you really do have to get comfortable with the word no, when people tell you no, and trying things in different ways. So that was, really eye-opening. And I'll say that I don't know that I learned a lot from the things that I did well. Every time that I didn't get something right, I learned far more from it and I advanced greater in the business. So I happened to become friends with failure, or perhaps just trying it a different way is what I learned.
Failure, no, and not getting there easily is your companion in business, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it became my friend. Like, it was like, okay, so then what's the lesson? What can I learn from this? Like, this is not a, this is supposed to teach me something. And I, and early on, because of coming from the government, I didn't understand that. And so in business, it's like, wow, this is, if I look at this is a teacher, what's mine to learn? And I look at it now 19 years later and go, that's what leadership development's all about. Like, that's what the business is all about. But if you can be comfortable with that and you can make changes quicker, then you're going to end up in a much better place faster.
Oh, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So you've effectively codified this, right? And it's that wonderful mesh of the experience that you've lived and everything you've learned on top of that, which I think is wonderful because it really gives you a context to the vast amount of information there around purpose, around alignment to purpose, around the ability to be what you're meant to be rather than who you are. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the pathway? Like, what is the secret to upside thinking?
Well, secret for me is goes back to even being in law enforcement. When I look at the research of 72 to 90% of people who live with regret, some form of regret, and the regret is mostly what they didn't do, what they didn't take action on. And so for me, I go back to that Abraham Maslow. If self-actualization is the goal and that's living your full potential, gosh, all those things that get in the way, what are they? And, you know, for me, that's where I come in is I get people who've experienced success in areas and then they go, but is that it? Like, is that all? Like, isn't there something else? Like, isn't there, you know, the grand parade and the balloons and the, and it's like, no, that's the quest for meaning. That's the quest for you using all of the gifts and abilities and talents and experiences you have. And so I look at it for me is that this has been the journey that I've been on. So now I get to effectively do that part, which is the personal, individual leadership development work versus the corporate consulting, hiring, firing, training. It's that if the leader themselves isn't healthy, it doesn't matter how many great systems and processes you have when the individual leader is not incredibly well. And I feel like we talk so much about resilience, and yet resilience is needed less when the leader is well. If you already focused on well-being, you don't have to bounce back because you understand that dance, which is what I talked about. Like every time I fell down, I went, okay, so I know that this is going to be part of business. So how does this, what do I need to do for me physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, financially, relationally, so that when that happens, it's not as much of a hard fall? Like, you know, what is that? And that's being well, not being, so resilience, I look at it as you got to figure that out when you're less well, because you need to figure out how to bounce back. But if you're already well, you're just, you're going, okay, well, that's just a sidestep or a dance or a...
You're fighting what you need to fight, the things you can't control. You're not fighting yourself because it's exhausting, right? Having that internal fight as well as trying to adapt to all the things that are happening around us. So if someone was just, they kind of felt that there was more and they get that build up day after day after day and the pressure cooker's boiling and they know they just got that sense that there's something else, but they can't put their finger on it. What are the sort of top two or three things you would get them to do right now to start that self-actualization?
One would be to create more space. I find that humans, especially leaders at the top of their game, are so overbooked. I can't come up with any new ideas in my business or even give direction for my team when there is a schedule that is just so slammed from early in the morning until late at night. And there's so much in the hustle and grind myth that I would have them create space. And whatever that space looks like, for some people, it's different, but that would be, you know, one of the first things. The second thing is I have a tool that I use, which is, you know, what I call SNAP. And it's stop, notice, ask, and then either, well, it could be all of them. It's pause, pray, pivot. And so throughout the course of the day, I find that sometimes people have meetings and they have activities in their calendars that they're really not conscious about why they're there.
No thought given at all.
That's exactly it. And every single day I will look and go, what's here? Am I supposed to meet with these people? I may have had it the week before and it made sense, but now as the week has gone on, it no longer makes sense. And I will shift and change what's in my calendar daily. And so I, throughout the day, have certain times where I snap. I stop, I notice, I ask questions, I pause, and then sometimes I have to pivot and make a shift versus sitting at the desk and going, okay, this is the thing, we're running through the day like that without any consciousness. So, you know, creating space, making sure that that snap technique is part of it. And then for me, the other thing is reevaluating your who. That's a big thing. Who is in, I will make shifts to my team in terms of responsibilities, make shifts in terms of who has access to me, make shifts in terms of who is going with me. I'm answering that who question regularly. And I don't feel that enough people have eyes on who it is has have access to them, and they're giving their precious time, energy, and money on a daily, weekly basis.
And all of that is limited resource.
That's it. That's it. That's exactly it. That's the reason why that's the focus. And it's amazing what people will come back with when I have them do that, though. You know, I had a gentleman, and last year he increased his business by $25 million. And he said to me, I don't understand this. You've told me to do, I have more time. I'm literally sitting on vacation with my family. And I'm going, I don't understand how there are more deals happening. And I said, it's because the belief that you are in it and that you are making it happen is such a myth. Like, you yourself, if you need the ability to have enough vision to see what actions are the right ones to take. And so if you're so busy in that grind, you can't see to make great decisions. So it's not just that you've had space, you've done things because of that space. And that's what allows you to make, I mean, there's more to it. You know, it's not just, he didn't just go away and make more money. So I don't want to simplify it. And that was the culmination of, you know, work that we did together throughout the year that resulted in him going, I don't understand it. And I'm like, it's because you believe that it's about you dialing down and getting focused and having more time in the office. And that's not the answer to some of these bigger questions.
That's awesome. So start that journey with upside thinking. I know what it feels like. We've all been there. Everyone has had this moment where the frustration builds. Create some space around you, lean into the snap technique, and also explore who is making demands or withdrawals. Who's making withdrawals on your essence? And maybe we can find some people that can put in some deposits instead. Lisa Marie, thank you so much for coming on A Few Minutes with Boo. I'm not very good at keeping this podcast to 15 minutes, I have to admit. The conversations are so great. So we've done a few minutes more. UpsideThinking.com is where you find Lisa Marie. Don't worry, just scroll down. You will find all the details to connect with her to start your own journey with Upside Thinking in the show notes below. Lisa Marie, very grateful for you taking a time out of your hectic day, finding some room, some space for me today, and allowing me to be one of your who. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that wraps another episode of The Few. And I'd like to thank our partners, without whom this episode wouldn't be possible. Firstly, Ode Management, an organization that brings world-class speakers into your event or organization to make a profound impact on your people to deliver the results that you want. And Afterburner, real-life fighter pilots, a team of men and women who for the past 25 years have helped organizations surpass their expectations, learning the tips and tricks fighter pilots use to win 98% of the time. If you enjoyed the show, please show your support by subscribing to the podcast, The Few with Boo, or our YouTube channel. It's been an absolute pleasure sharing the stories of these remarkable people with you. I hope that helps you keep the dream alive, but more importantly, equips you with a few ideas of how to turn those dreams into reality to help you become one of the few too.